Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
92.9 FM ESPN presents the area's only national columnist who spends his afternoons bringing unique perspective to Memphis radio. He'll make you think. He'll make you laugh. He'll sometimes make you change the station if children are around. And he apologizes in advance for that. It's 4 o'clock. Let's get into it. This is the Gary Parish Show.
My name's Gary Parish, speaking to you from 54th and Broadway, New York City. Bennett Doyle back in Memphis producing the program. Glad he's with me. Glad you're with me. Hope you're getting through the day best you can.
A day lost most everything. On horse, whiskey, and wedding
rings. And I hope you're not a Barry Bonds fan, hoping today's going to be a good day for the baseball legend, because most insiders believe it will not be, which is ridiculous, but whatever. We'll talk about Barry Bonds and the Hall of Fame momentarily. First, though, quickly, let me set this afternoon's schedule for you. 4:20, Rob Doster is going to join me, founder of the Field of 68 podcast. So I'll talk college basketball with Rob, obviously ask him about Penny Hardaway's Tigers. We'll talk about Auburn. We'll talk about Kentucky. We'll talk about a massive game happening tonight on ESPN, inside Pauley Pavilion, Arizona at UCLA. Is former Gonzaga assistant Tommy Lloyd going to win a national title before Gonzaga actually wins a national title? It's possible. Rob Doster is going to be here in the next segment. Finish that, take a break, come back, do four notable stories at 4:44, at which point we'll discuss four previously undiscussed stories, among them Brittany Matthews, Patrick Mahomes' fiance, has responded to criticism tied to her spraying champagne on fans after the Chiefs beat the Bills on Sunday night. I'll tell you what she said around 4:44. Add Chiefs coach Andy Reid to the list of people who think the NFL's overtime rule needs to be addressed. I'll tell you what he said, even though he benefited from it on Sunday night. We'll do that a little later on this hour. Aaron Rodgers addressed his future this afternoon on the Pat McAfee Show. I'll tell you what he said just before 5 o'clock. And Grizz guard Desmond Bain has cleared health and safety protocol, so he'll be available for tomorrow night's game with the Spurs in San Antonio. We'll talk about that during four notable stories at 4:44. 5 o'clock, Jeff Calkins, just like always, that I'll eventually do dinner to go and get on out of here. So that's the rundown. We got a lot to get to, but I did want to start with the National Baseball Hall of Fame, because in about an hour, we will officially know whether Barry Bonds has been voted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame. This is his final year on the writer's ballot. He needs to be included on 75% of the ballots to gain entrance, and he's never really come close to that number in nine previous years. And most people, including ESPN baseball insider Jeff Passan, believe he's not going to get to the 75% threshold this year. Big Bet Bennett, you're a baseball fan. Question: does Barry Bonds belong in the Hall of Fame?
Yes. Yes, absolutely. I mean, I think you simplify it as you can't tell the story of Major League Baseball without including Barry Bonds, and I just think that he deserves to be there.
There's no question in my mind that he deserves to be there. And there's no question in anybody's mind that he deserves to be there based on his baseball talent and achievements. Obviously, the only thing that prevents some voters from putting him on a ballot is that, you know, he is the face of the steroid era, even more so than Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa. So that has been held against him year after year after year after year, even though, and I say this as a 45-year-old man, Barry Bonds is the best baseball player I've ever seen. I've been watching this sport my entire life. There's never been anything like him. He is, in my opinion, the best hitter that has ever lived, and there is a lot of evidence to back that up, and he is clearly one of the greatest baseball players to ever live, and perhaps the greatest baseball player this planet has ever seen. For those who either don't follow baseball or maybe didn't live through it, Barry Bonds is a 7-time MVP, a 14-time All-Star, an 8-time Gold Glove winner. He led the league in hitting twice, led the league in home runs twice. He is the all-time home run leader with 762, and he also hit more homers in one season than anybody else has ever hit in one season. That number was 73. He's the all-time leader in walks for a career, 2,558, and in a season, 232. His 609 on-base percentage in a season is the best ever. His 863 slugging percentage in a season is the best ever. In other words, this is a man who had individual seasons unlike anybody's ever had, and he had a career unlike anybody's ever had. In a vacuum, it wouldn't even be debatable. He would be on 100% of Hall of Fame ballots, and he would have been on them, you know, 9 years ago. But because he, like so many others in that era, did use performance-enhancing drugs, the baseball writers, whose job it is to decide who goes into the Hall of Fame and who doesn't, at least based on the writers' ballots, they have refused to put him in the Hall of Fame the same way they've refused to put Roger Clemens in the Hall of Fame, Mark McGwire in the Hall of Fame, and Alex Rodriguez, among others, in the Hall of Fame. And here's the problem with that. Do you know what the obvious problem with holding steroid users out of the Hall of Fame, like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, Alex Rodriguez, you know what the problem with doing that is?
What?
There's already people in the Hall of Fame who are suspected steroid users.
Mm-hmm.
Ivan Rodriguez, Jeff Bagwell, Mike Piazza are in the Hall of Fame. All are tied to performance-enhancing drugs. Ivan Rodriguez was accused of using performance-enhancing drugs by Jose Canseco when they were teammates. Now, you can say a whole lot of stuff about Jose Canseco, but the stuff he's said over the years about who used and who didn't has largely been accurate. Oh, and by the way, Ivan Rodriguez, Pudge was his nickname. He lost 30 pounds the season before Major League Baseball's testing program with penalties was put into place in 2005. He was 35 years old. How many 35-year-old athletes do you know that lose 30 pounds before the start of a subsequent season?
None.
Zero. The guy was using for years, putting together a Hall of Fame resume, and then Major League Baseball said, hey, we're going to start testing for this and penalizing for this, and then somehow he lost 30 pounds. Why? Because he quit using. Because he knew he'd get busted now. That's how he lost 30 pounds. Jeff Bagwell has admitted to taking an anabolic steroid. He's still in the Hall of Fame. So for me, the conversation stops and starts right there. Why is it okay for Barry Bonds, a performance-enhancing drug user, to be in the Hall of Fame? Because you've already got guys like that in the Hall of Fame. Not to mention players from another era who have admitted to using amphetamines, which is another form of a performance-enhancing drug. And so Jeff Passan at ESPN makes this case in a really nice column at ESPN.com. If you haven't seen it yet, go check it out. And I just do not understand why more people who actually vote on these things, who have the power to put people into the Hall of Fame or keep people out of the Hall of Fame, I don't understand their argument for doing this to Barry Bonds. Like, if you want to do it to a borderline Hall of Famer, like, that's fine. Like, if you want to do it to Sammy Sosa because you genuinely believe that Sammy Sosa would have never even been a recognizable Major League Baseball player if not for performance-enhancing drugs, like, fine, whatever. But this is Barry Bonds. This is a guy who was a three-time MVP before he was ever suspected of using performance-enhancing drugs. And as the story goes, Barry Bonds was clean up until after the 1998 season. That 1998 season, of course, being the one where Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa went on that home run chase and captured the attention of the nation, not just baseball fans, but sports fans in general. That home run chase was celebrated. And again, as the story goes, Barry Bonds watched that and became incredibly frustrated that these two people were getting all of the attention and breaking records when he knew he was 50 times the baseball player, 100 times the hitter that either one of them was. And it is at that point, the reporting has suggested, that Barry Bonds basically said, if everybody else is going to do this, then I'm going to do it too. And then he did it, and he became superhuman. This dude got walked with the bases loaded one time in the bottom of the ninth. Do you understand how wild that is?
Yes, that's crazy.
It was a two-run game. The bases were loaded. He was at the plate, and the opposition intentionally walked him, let the Giants score a run because they'd rather just put a run across home plate than pitch to Barry Bonds. That's how superhuman this guy became. Hitting balls into the bay, one after another after another. There was a time when he was appointment television. I had the Major League Baseball subscription, and obviously I'm watching Mets games, but you'd keep an eye on every Giants game and keep an eye on when Barry Bonds was due up in the lineup, and you'd change the channel when he got on deck because you knew there was a decent chance you were going to see something remarkable, a 100% chance you were going to lay your eyes on the guy who is arguably the greatest hitter of all time. He was great before performance-enhancing drugs. He was great after performance-enhancing drugs. And there is no way somebody with his credentials should be held out of the National Baseball Hall of Fame. You can tell his entire story on that plaque. Put him in. Make sure it's understood he's the home run king. Make sure it's understood he won 7 MVP awards. Make sure it's understood he was walked than more player in the history of the sport. He was walked more than any other player in the history of the sport. Make sure it's understood that he hit more homers in a season than anybody ever has. And also make sure it's understood that he is the face of the so-called steroid era. Tell his entire story, but that story should be in the Hall of Fame. And if in an hour baseball writers make it clear once again that they're just not going to put him there, well, then that's another failure, just the latest failure on their hands. The good news for Barry Bonds is that there is a Today's Game Era committee that can still eventually vote him in, but the idea that you ever even have to have that conversation seems a little silly to me. If you're going to have a museum dedicated to the history of baseball and all of its greatest players, Barry Bonds belongs in there. It's wild that we're still having this conversation in 2022. Rob Doster's up next.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Here come the menaces to sobriety, like what? Super thug is thumping on the cut.
Desmond Bane has cleared health and safety protocols, which indicates he will be available for the Grizzlies tomorrow night in San Antonio. We'll talk Grizz in the next segment. Jeff Karg is going to join me a little after 5 o'clock, but right now he's the founder of the Field of 68. That's a podcast you can subscribe to anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. It's Rob Doster making the big interview.
award-winning writers, athletes, coaches, the biggest names in sports. It's the Gary Parrish Show Big Interview, presented by The Wing Guru, online at thewingguru.com.
So, Rob, it's never boring in Memphis. Penny Hardaway's fourth season has been eventful, that's for sure. The Tigers are now 10-8, coming off a win at Tulsa. They are at home against East Carolina on Thursday night. From an outsider's perspective, somebody who covers this sport intelligently and closely but isn't sort of trapped in the day-to-day of it in the Memphis market, what's your general thoughts on the situation at Memphis as it sits right now?
It's a mess. That's kind of what my general thoughts are. And honestly, I don't think Penny's done a very good job managing egos and managing talent and keeping everybody happy. You know, I think role allocation and expectations of shots and things of that nature, I think that's probably where he struggled the most. You know, I think a lot about Trevion Williams when it comes to what's going on with Memphis right now and how he kind of sacrificed his starting spot at Purdue once Zach Edey beat him out, right? And you watch, whenever he's not in the game, he's the biggest cheerleader on that sideline. He understands that Matt Painter is doing what is best for this team to win, and this is his best opportunity to win a national championship if he goes along with this plan and buys in. I think you look at Auburn and see how their most dynamic backcourt player, Wendell Green, comes off the bench and doesn't complain about it. You see how Jabari Smith is fine playing second fiddle to Katie Johnson when he needs to, and how Walker Kessler is fine just doing nothing but blocking shots and catching lobs, and how everybody kind of understands what they are being asked to do and accepting their role. You know, Alan Flanagan is a perfect example. He's a veteran that was on track to be a lottery pick or a first-round pick, depending on where you looked in the preseason, got injured, came back, and now he's like the fifth option on that team. But he's just buying in and doing his job and letting that young freshman come in to be the superstar because he knows that's how you become the number one team in the country. So that's, to me, that's the biggest issue with this team is people not understanding what it's going to take to win and everybody wanting to be the guy when not everyone can be the guy on the team.
One of the points some other coaches have made to me when I'm talking to them about whatever, and Memphis obviously comes up, they say, you know, obviously Penny and his staff can recruit. And they actually say, I think Penny and the staff can coach. Like, I don't hear a lot of people saying, I don't think Penny can coach or teach or instruct. But what they, a lot of them go to is, how many of those guys on his staff worked on a college campus before they worked on the Memphis campus? Larry Brown, obviously, but he's also 81 years old. But, you know, Penny Hardaway never worked on a college campus, never worked in a college basketball program until he was the head coach at his alma mater. Cody Toppert never worked on a college basketball campus, never worked in a college basketball program until he got the job at Memphis. The same was true for Rasheed Wallace when Rasheed Wallace was on staff. The point these coaches are making is that there's a lot more to running a college basketball program than just recruiting and coaching your team. And a severe and unusual lack of experience in that regard has probably complicated things at Memphis quite a bit. Do you agree with that sentiment at all?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the perfect example is what's going on with Rasheed Wallace in this moment, right? Like, why is he in a situation where he's not able to be on the bench anymore, right? How is that something that is going to make sense when he's supposed to be one of the guys that is, you know, helping to develop Jalen Duren into being a superstar and hoping to develop Malcolm Dandridge into being a guy that can be, you know, an all ACC caliber player, right? I also think, you know, we talk about how well he can recruit, but I also think this is a horribly constructed roster. You know, at some point, Penny's got to look at himself in the mirror and say, okay, my plan coming into this season was to turn a 17-year-old, 170-pound gunner into me, into a guy that is one of the greatest point guards of a generation. Someone who has never done that in his entire basketball life. He's never played the point. I'm going to turn him, as a 17-year-old that's supposed to be a senior in high school, into the guy running this offense. You know, you went into the season without a point guard. What did you think was going to happen? You know, like, I understand that he's frustrated, and I understand that there's criticisms that are being lobbed his way, and he might not think it's fair. And he's probably working really, really hard with this group to try to get it right. But he has not done a good job with role definition and role allocation, and he did a really, really bad job with building a roster that's going to succeed at the college level. How do you win without a point guard, GP? Look at all the national champions since 2010. I think 10 of the last 11 national champions have had two point guards on their roster. The only one that didn't was a team that had Anthony Davis and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist. They started two point guards. So I understand why he's frustrated, and losing's never easy. He's never lost in his life. I don't think he understands how to handle it. But at some point, you've got to look at yourself in the mirror and say, you know what? I didn't do a very good job getting this group ready to win.
Talking to Rob Doster from the Field of 68. He's on Twitter, at Rob Doster. You mentioned Amani Bates. If you were an NBA executive, how concerned would you be about the way he's looked through 15 college games?
I mean, he's kind of looked about what we expected him to be, right? He looks exactly the same that he looked at Peace Jam this past year, where he hits a ton of really difficult shots. He shows flashes of being a little bit of a playmaker. He also takes a lot of really dumb shots. He makes a lot of really bad decisions. He's just kind of – he's one of these guys, I think, that skip too many steps, right? The conversation about Shaden Sharpe, and I don't mean to turn this into something about Kentucky, but the conversation about Shaden Sharpe and whether or not he should play this year, and whether or not they should just kind of throw him into the mix, I don't think it's ever good to kind of rush your own process. And it feels like Amani Bates, since he was 14 years old, has kind of rushed his process to become the next great basketball player coming out of the American developmental system, when really what he should have just done is kept doing what he was doing, spent all the years that he needed to spend in high school, get to the point where you're physically ready to handle the college level, get to the point where you're mentally ready to handle this kind of attention, get to the point where you are as good of a basketball player as you can be when you step in the door. I mean, let's call it what it is. He hasn't been good enough to be someone that belongs in that conversation to be a top 10 pick. You know, I don't think that's something that is subjective. I think that's pretty objective. You know, so if you look at what he's done and the efficiency that he's played with, it's not good enough. He hasn't been a great defender. So it's just, you know, I feel bad just kind of lobbing grenades at a 17-year-old kid that's supposed to be a senior in high school. And I still think he's going to end up being a very good player one day. He's going to end up in the NBA. He's too talented of a scorer not to play in the NBA. But I do think that it's big picture, never a great thing to rush your own process, man. Just enjoy the path getting to where you need to be. You don't have to get there the next day, you know?
We've seen so many parents over the years do exactly this, make this mistake with uniquely talented young prospects. I think the most famous is probably Renardo Sidney. You know, he's a young man growing up in Mississippi and is considered the best player in the country at his age. And then they move him to California and they build a grassroots team around him. And everything just gets, you know, messed up, and he never becomes the player he was supposed to be. And with Amani, you know, they take him out of a traditional high school. They build a grassroots team around him. He's not practicing with or playing with comparable talent. He's not getting competent coaching. Then they reclassify him, rush him off to college when it appears clearly not ready for that. You know, listen, being a parent is hard. And, you know, you and I both know that as parents. And I imagine being the parent of a uniquely gifted athlete is even more difficult. But I do feel bad for him, because I think his guidance hasn't probably been the best. And I'm not questioning anybody as a parent. I'm sure his father is loving and brilliant. But I think as it pertains to his development as a basketball prospect, they've made some pretty poor choices that have caught up to him.
Yeah, you know, I think in hindsight, there may be things that he would have done differently. I would also personally say that us in the media probably did not help things either. And I can look in the mirror and say that I wrote columns where I put Kevin Durant in the same sentence as Amani Bates when he was 14 to 15 years old the first time. I think we saw him together at Peace Jam back in, what was it, 2019, GP? Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I probably spoke a little hyperbole when talking about him, because when he was 14 years old and you watched him play, it was very easy to see what he was doing on the floor and compare it to what Kevin Durant was doing at Golden State at that time. He was on the cover of Sports Illustrated as a 15-year-old, and I can't remember what the headline was, but we kind of lobbed all this pressure on him. And I know that was very difficult for him to handle, because I think the way that the media ecosystem works is you kind of build someone up and then you kind of break them down. It's just it's difficult for 16-year-olds to deal with, and I know that I'm probably guilty of doing a lot of that myself. And you know, it's one of those things where you try not to do it again, but it's hard, man. And there are times where I do feel bad for him. You know, he's a 17-year-old put in this situation. It's a lot on him. There's other times where I say, well, it's a mistake of his own doing, you know. So it's a tough situation. I try not to be too harsh on him, but you know, it's a lot easier to kind of look at the leadership in that program and say that's kind of where the fault lies, I think.
I'm talking to Rob Doster from the Field of 68. You mentioned Kentucky earlier, and you were talking about how Penny roster built and maybe didn't do it with a, you know, while considering all of the things you should consider while you're building a college basketball roster heading into the season. You know, with Alex Lomax as your only true point guard option is you know, obviously a mistake. At Kentucky, I feel like John Calipari, and I give him an immense amount of credit for this, he really did, you know, start thinking about a roster makeup more with this team than I think he did in years past when he, you know, would just go out and get a bunch of five stars and then try to make it fit. Like, he saw last season's team didn't have competent point guard play, didn't have enough shooting, and so he prioritized point guard play and shooting. He went out and got Sahvir Wheeler from the transfer portal, enrolled Ty Washington, so now when healthy, you know, Kentucky can play with two point guards at the same time. He added Kellen Grady, transfer portal, that provides more shooting, added another transfer from Iowa who is hurt, but, you know, the mindset was same thing, let's add shooting. You know, do you think that's an accurate assessment of what John did? And I'm not just going to go out and try to find the best players to enroll in advance of the 2021-22 season. I'm going to find really good players who fit together really well.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely what he did. And the funny part is he still has a bunch of five stars that he brought in that, sure, that may or may not be playing this year. Like, they got a top 10 kid in Damian Collins that doesn't even sniff the floor at this point. So he still did some of that, but to your point, he, instead of building a group of players and just building a roster, he built a team that is going to fit together when you actually put it on the court. And they're able to play more ways than one, right? Like, if they want to go big, they always have Oscar Tshiebwe in the middle, and they can kind of put one of these other four men like Bryce Hopkins or someone out there. If they want to go small, they can play Sahvir Wheeler with Ty Washington and Kellen Grady. And all of a sudden you have a bunch of shooters that can play up and down in transition. They have guys that can give you multiple looks, because if you need to play Ty on the ball, you can do it. If you need to play Sahvir Wheeler on the ball, you can do it. If you need to play in transition, I don't think there's anybody better in the open floor at this point than Sahvir Wheeler is. So he built a group that is much more modern than I think we've ever seen a John Calipari basketball team be, right? Like, this team can play different ways, different styles, and honestly, I think that they're probably one of, like, the 6 to 8 best teams in college basketball. And if you were to line them up player for player, talent for talent, and just look at them on paper, I don't know that they are significantly better than what Memphis is in terms of their talent. Right, like, Memphis has a guy that's going to be a top 10 pick in Jalen Duren. So does Kentucky. Memphis has guys that are good college players that were able to put together a run to the NIT title. Kentucky's got a bunch of good college players too, but the pieces fit. And that matters so much more at the college level, and it matters significantly more if you don't have a point guard on your roster.
We've reached the point where people are starting to debate Jabari Smith, Paolo Banchero, Chet Holmgren as the number one overall pick in the 2022 NBA draft. Where do you fall on that discussion?
At this point, it's Jabari for me. He just, when you're that size and you can shoot it the way that he can shoot it, and he puts in the effort that he has put in defensively, and he plays as hard as he plays, he's a no-brainer to me at this point. Chet, look, I love him in theory. I just got to see the kid put on weight. Man, I can't draft a 7-footer that weighs 180 pounds. Number one overall, when I have a chance to get someone like a Jabari Smith. And Paolo, I'm still in on Paolo. He's big. He's physically developed. He can pass it better than I think people realize. He is – I can't remember who made this comparison, so I'm just going to steal it. Someone called him the modern-day Chris Webber. And I don't know if he'll end up being like a Hall of Fame caliber player, but I think that he's very much kind of has that in his range of outcomes, if that makes sense. So, I mean, I love Jabari. I love Paolo. I'll probably take Jabari number one at this point, though.
Wrapping up here with Rob Doster from the Field of 68. He's on Twitter at Rob Doster. Last thing before I let you go, we got a great one tonight at 10 o'clock Central on ESPN. Pac-12 Showdown, Arizona at UCLA. Two questions. Which one of those teams do you believe in more? And B, is it possible former Gonzaga assistant Tommy Lloyd will win a national title before Gonzaga wins a national title.
He might, man. I think this Arizona team is right in the same conversation as Auburn and Gonzaga for the best team of college basketball. That, I mean, they're that good. They got pros up and down their roster. They got a monster big Christian Coloco. They got a guy that might end up being a top 10 pick in Benedict Mathurin. They have good point guard playing Kirk Creasa, who is he plays with a certain swagger and attitude that I just love out of point guards. They have length, they have athleticism, they can play fast, they can defend, they have shooting. They have everything, man. And I'm still in on UCLA as being a team that can make a run. I just don't think that they're the best team in the Pac-12 anymore. You know, when you rely on being a group that hits a bunch of tough shots, it's very difficult to consistently win at a very high level. So they're going to win big games. They're going to probably make a run of the tournament because they have guys that have been in that moment before. And I'll be very interested to see what happens now that they have fans back in that building. It just did not look like the same team playing Oregon at home in an empty building that they did when they played Villanova in the opener.
That is Rob Doster, founder of the Field of 68's podcast. You can subscribe to anywhere you subscribe to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts. He's on Twitter at Rob Doster. Thanks so much, buddy. I appreciate your time. Hope to see you soon.
GP, always a pleasure, man.
I'll see you, baby. That's Rob Doster from the Field of 68. When we come back, Patrick Mahomes' fiance, the mother of his child, is in the middle of a controversy because she sprayed champagne all over Chiefs fans while celebrating Sunday night from her luxury suite. She responded to the criticism late last night on Twitter. I'll tell you what she said next. You're listening. Gary Parrish Show, we're on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Guests appear on the Smile Center Hotline, live from the Service Master by Cornerstone Studios. We don't pray for disaster. We just pray we get called when there is one. At Service Master by Cornerstone. Now back to the Gary Parrish Show on 92.9 okay, FM ESPN.
Hear the wound and then you stab me in my back again. You the type to play the joke and try to hide your hand. Not the type to come around and try to play your friend. You the type to cut the grass and snake your best man. I'm the type to close the deal and cut my then. See me in person, I look like a ghost. See me in person, I look like a ghost. You wanna come in and play with the goat? You wanna come in and play with the goat? Are you rap? Sound like me, can't tell who is who. You got no real identity, can't tell you from you. Price went up.
Yeah. Is it for auto insurance, homeowners insurance, life insurance, or business insurance? If so, get in touch with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. That's a second-generation local agency, been owned and operated since 1981. If you live in Tennessee, Elizabeth can help you. You live in Mississippi, Elizabeth can help you. She's a proud partner with Memphis Tigers Athletics. So if you are somebody who likes to support businesses that support the local university, then Elizabeth Rook Insurance is the agency for you. You probably got a local doctor, a local dentist, a local attorney. You also need a local insurance agent. Because when you get to a point where you're going to have to make an automobile claim or a homeowner's claim, and you will get to that point, I mean, I don't wish it on you, but you're going to get to that point, you want to be dealing with somebody who knows you, somebody you can see in person. You don't want to dial a 1-800 number. You want to dial a 901 number. That's what you can do with Elizabeth Rook Insurance. 901-867-SAVE. 901-867-7283. It's Elizabeth Rook Insurance. Two locations in the Memphis area. One on Canada Road in Lakeland. The other on Highway 51 in Covington. Learn more online. RookInsurance.com. That's RookInsurance.com. Jeff Cargan's going to join me a little after 5 o'clock. But right now, I got four stories I'd like to discuss.
Four stories at 444. Brought to you by Delta Dental of Tennessee. Covering your smile. Four notable stories at 444. Gary tends to lose focus, start telling stories, and forget what he wanted to talk about at certain points every afternoon. So we've developed a device that ensures he'll touch on important things you need to know each day at this time. This is GP's Four Notable Stories at 444. Story number one.
Big Ben Bennett, we have controversy in Kansas City.
Yeah, I've seen.
Mm-hmm. It involves Brittany Matthews. She is Patrick Mahomes' fiance. She's the mother of his child. And on Sunday night, right after the Chiefs beat the Bills in incredible fashion, from her luxury suite in Arrowhead Stadium, she popped a bottle of champagne and sprayed it all over Chiefs fans sitting and yelling and celebrating below her. There's two lines of thinking here. One is, this is just a woman who was celebrating her husband and celebrating an achievement by a team that she loves just as much as these fans love. And so her spraying champagne on them was just her way of including them in the celebration. That's one way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The other way of thinking is, yo, why are you spraying champagne on us from your luxury suite? It's sticky. We have a long drive home. We love that you are excited. We're excited too. But that doesn't give you permission, consent to spray us with an alcoholic beverage. Where are you at on this, Big Bet Bennett?
Absolutely the latter. Do not spray me with champagne. Now, like, if Patrick Mahomes comes running up into the crowd, like after that walk-off win and wants to spray everybody with champagne, you know, maybe we'll talk. Like, it's Patrick Mahomes. We came to see this guy. Don't spray me with champagne if you're Patrick Mahomes' girlfriend. That's unacceptable.
It's his fiance.
Oh, it's his fiance. Okay, I'm sorry.
It's the mother of his child.
I apologize, Brittany. And then her response is like, I mean, I can't stand her. I can't help it.
You hate Brittany Matthews?
I don't know if I hate her, but I mean, just everything I've seen, you know, publicly, I don't like her, no.
Her response to the criticism, she finally addressed it last night on Twitter, and her response is as follows. I just wish I could do what I want without getting attacked every week. Bennett, she just wants to be able to do whatever she wants, including spraying champagne on strangers, if that's what she wants to do.
You know, when she puts it that way, maybe I should feel sorry for her, GP.
Is that too much to ask? Just allow me, Brittany Matthews.
Why can't we all just do whatever we want?
Why, is that too much to just allow me, Brittany Matthews, to do whatever I want to do with no regard whatsoever for how anybody else feels about it? What a wild thing to say.
What a stupid thing to say.
This poor woman, she had 24 hours to think this through. And that's what she came up with?
Yeah, like, I don't know if you asked me if I hated Brittany Matthews. No, the answer is no. It's just she seems incredibly obnoxious. Like, if you've seen videos of her in the past, it's always like a lot of screaming and just loud, like, I don't know. She seems like a very obnoxious person.
Is she worth an Instagram follow?
I mean, I guess.
I went and checked it out a little bit earlier today. A lot of workout videos.
Yeah, she's a fitness instructor.
She's doing a lot of squatting, I saw.
Uh-huh, she runs some fitness company. I saw it on her profile.
How do you feel about squatting videos?
Squatting videos are cool.
Yeah, I don't mind them.
Squatting videos are cool. Squatting is good for you.
What would Instagram be without squatting videos, you know?
Someplace I don't want to be.
That's not an Instagram I want to be
at. I don't want to be a part of that Instagram.
Well, she should have said, old Brittany Matthews. She should have said, you know what? Here's what she is. Something along these lines.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm sorry would have been great. You got to have that in there somewhere, probably.
Yes.
Hey, guys, just wanted to say I've seen the video and I've heard, you know, everybody's opinions on it. And the truth is I got caught up in the moment. I was, just like you, so happy for my partner, so happy for this franchise that I care so much about, so happy for you guys because I know how much you care about this franchise as well. And I was just celebrating and I wanted to celebrate with you. And I got caught up in the moment. And in that moment, spraying champagne seemed like a totally reasonable way to celebrate. But given 24 hours removed from it, I can now realize how maybe not everybody wanted to be sprayed with champagne. And for that, I apologize. Yeah, it just would have played better, I think.
Yep.
Then. I just wish I could do whatever I want.
It's not going to go over well, Brittany. It's just not going to work.
Because I wouldn't like it. Like, there are certain times where you can reasonably expect to be sprayed with champagne. Like, if you go into a locker room after a game, a team has just won a championship.
Yep.
You enter that locker room with an understanding there's a decent chance I might be sprayed with champagne. But sitting in the stands at a football stadium is not a reasonable place to assume you might be sprayed with an alcoholic beverage. You know, as some of these people have pointed out on social media, hey, I don't drink. I had an hour drive home. I don't want to have sticky alcoholic beverage all over me while I'm trying to drive home because the quarterback's fiance decided she would spray me from her luxury suite. Like, would she like it if we sprayed her from down below? Probably not. So why would she think it's okay for her to do that to us? And I think that's generally true. Like, there's no way you can spray champagne into a crowd at a football game and be under the assumption that everybody who is going to get sprayed with champagne is okay with that. I'm sure some were. I know others weren't. And if others weren't going to be, then you probably can't do it. I can understand her getting caught up in the moment, but that's how she probably should have addressed it when she addressed it last night. Hey, guys, I got caught up in the moment, but I apologize. Instead, she made it clear she just wants to continue doing whatever she wants without getting attacked, and I wish her luck. Seems unlikely, but I wish her luck.
Story number two.
Andy Reid is the latest to come out and say that the NFL needs to at least have a real conversation about the way they do overtime. And this is a man who benefited from the way they do overtime just two nights ago. As you know, the Chiefs won a coin toss, so they got the ball, and then Patrick Mahomes marched them right down the field. Game over. Buffalo never got to possess the ball after regulation. And a lot of people have pointed out that seems fundamentally flawed. And it does seem fundamentally flawed. Should the NFL change the overtime rule, Bennett?
Yeah, I mean, just, you know, and I don't know what it is. Like, I've heard the different ideas. Like, you know, some people say, well, you just have one period of time in overtime, and whoever's winning at the end of that, that's the winner of the game. And then some people say, you know, we do the back and forth thing, kind of like in college football, and then you eventually have to start going for two every possession if it keeps getting tied up. But, yeah, you watch how that game played out. It's just not right that Josh Allen didn't have the ball in his hands in overtime, especially watching how that game played out.
It's outrageous. There's no other sport where that would happen. Like, imagine if a baseball game went to extra innings, and then you flipped a coin, and if you got it right, you get to hit, and if you don't get it right, you go out into the field. And if the team that is hitting scores a run in the top of the 10th, there is no bottom of the 10th. The game's just over. They scored one run, and now you don't even get to bat in the bottom of the 10th. That's good. Nobody would think that makes any sense, and no. Yet that is what we do in the NFL. I don't love the way we do it in college, but I do prefer the collegiate overtime model to the NFL overtime model. Like, I haven't put much thought into this, but one way, like, something I could get down with, because I don't like that in college you basically start in field goal range. Like, let's back it up a little bit.
Agreed.
I'd do this. Team A gets the ball at the 50, and they're going to just play it until they kick a field goal, score, turn it over, either via fumble, interception, or on downs. And then no matter what happens there, unless it's a pick six or a scoop and score, no matter what happens there, Team B will also get the ball at the 50, and we'll keep doing that back and forth, until at the end of one series of this, somebody's got more points than the other. If Team A goes out and scores a touchdown from the 50, and then Team B comes out and scores a touchdown from the 50, well, then we're going to do it again. And then if Team A kicks a field goal and Team B scores a touchdown, then it's done. But we're going to keep doing it until we get somebody at the end of a round of it with more points than the other. Is that reasonable?
Yep, I think so.
Yeah, I mean, you could tinker with it if you want to, but fundamentally, I think that's the best way to go about it. You know, you want to start at the 45 instead of the 50, or the 40 instead of the 50, or whatever. You can tinker with it if you like, but both teams should have an offensive opportunity in overtime. The fact that the NFL has a system where that isn't guaranteed seems like a problem.
Story number three.
Aaron Rodgers went on the Pat McAfee show earlier today and seemed to suggest, certainly sound like a man who is A, planning to play football next season, and B, planning to play football next season with the Green Bay Packers. He went out of his way to say his relationship with the general manager is in a good place, his relationship with the organization is in a good place, and that he doesn't want to drag this out. He seemed to hint that he'll have a decision in place at some point next month, and certainly seemed to hint that as long as it can all make sense financially, he'll be playing quarterback for the Green Bay Packers next season. Is that what you suspect will happen now?
Yeah, because I think, and Jason mentioned this earlier, and I think it's right, I think there's a good chance that they might try to franchise tag Davante Adams. Right. I mean, keep those two together. And Aaron's made it clear he wants to play with Davante Adams. Like, right. That's his guy. So I think that because of that, and because I think Davante Adams will likely be there, that they'll just run the thing back and try to figure out a way to make the team better going into next season.
They got huge salary cap issues, but like, there is a scenario where they can easily bring back Aaron Rodgers and Davante Adams, and those seem like the most important pieces. And Aaron Rodgers seemed like a guy who is certainly leaning that direction, you know, as it pertains to what he's going to do next season, come back to Green Bay and make another run at it. Because, you know, you start looking at other options and like where what is a better spot next season for Aaron Rodgers than Green Bay? Like, perhaps there's one out there, but I'm not sure that there is.
Yeah, I'm not either. I mean, I think the ones that stand out are going to be like Denver or the Pittsburgh Steelers, but I just think that where he is right now, you've just got such a good chance of winning that division every year like you already are. Like, I think you stay there.
And if the main reason it got complicated between him and the franchise was because he and the front office were sideways, if he's now saying we're not sideways anymore, like we're all in a good place, we're all talking, we're all being open and honest with each other, when he goes out of his way to say, yeah, I'm in a good place with my front office, then that eliminates the biggest thing that made him want to leave Green Bay in the first place. So I suspect he'll be back there next season.
Well, and you made the point yesterday, too. Like, let's just be honest with ourselves. Like, Aaron Rodgers is a guy who likes to speak, you know, publicly, and some of the things he says are a little out there sometimes. And you could get away with that in Green Bay. Like, they're not gonna turn on you for that stuff. You go somewhere else, that may not be the case.
Right. You know, this pandemic has done a lot of things, obviously. But I think the most interesting thing it's done is, boy, you learn a lot about people. I've learned a lot about people over the past couple of years.
Yes.
Like people I don't know, like, you know, celebrities and like you know, Aaron Rodgers. And then people I do know, like people in my family, people who I, you know, am friendly with. This pandemic has taught us a lot about people, what matters to them and what doesn't. And Aaron Rodgers has undeniably turned himself into a villain among a certain, I use that word very loosely, but into a villain of some sort for a significant portion of the population. It doesn't hurt him in Green Bay because it's Green Bay, but like that stuff he's been saying lately, that wouldn't go over so well in, say, San Francisco or Los Angeles or New York. And I really do think that's probably limits the places where he would be comfortable playing football, because, you know, he can say what he says on the Pat McAfee show, and Green Bay fans, you know, will largely just either not mind it or be willing to look past it. And that just wouldn't be the case in a lot of other places. And, you know, we talked to Will Brinson about it yesterday. He's a senior NFL writer for CBS Sports. He said absolutely he thinks that's at least on the list of reasons he believes Aaron Rodgers will just remain in Green Bay as opposed to, you know, go play somewhere else. And so, you know, all indications at this point are that's exactly what he's going to do.
Story number four.
Tim McMahon from ESPN tweeted today a picture. Desmond Bane, he has cleared the NBA's health and safety protocols and rejoined the team. So he's expected to play tomorrow night in San Antonio when the Grizzlies take on the Spurs. Also in that same tweet said Ja Morant did not practice today because of personal reasons, but is expected to play in San Antonio tomorrow. You got any concerns about Ja's personal reasons?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I'm looking around and I haven't seen too many people talking about it, so I would assume it's not a huge deal, but I guess we'll see tomorrow.
Hey, if he needed a day off, who deserves it more than Ja Morant?
Nobody. Yeah. You're right.
Long as he's in the starting lineup, I'm cool.
Yep.
But that's the news from Tim McMahon. We'll see what the starting lineup looks like tomorrow night when the Grizz are in San Antonio. Jeff Calkins is up next.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At-Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field. It's going to go. Alvarez ties the game.
Subscribe to At-Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.